All right, well, for our study this morning, we are going to be studying in John chapter 10. I'm very excited about this chapter for a lot of reasons. It's one of those chapters that's familiar to us. It's easy to look past what's there because of its familiarity. I won't pretend that I have captured enough that we will remove that tendency, but there's a few things here that I think you're going to really get some good out of. We'll probably take and verses. So if someone has turned to John 10, I would appreciate it if you would read those for us. All right, so John 10, we start in with a very familiar passage about Jesus being the shepherd and the good shepherd. So let's start out here. Who were the listeners? Somebody had fun with that. Who were the listeners here? Who's he talking to? Okay, and that's exactly the point, not that the Pharisees were with him, but this continues right on in chapter 9. So you remember all the conflict we were seeing in chapter 9 about this man born blind and all the hoopla and the Pharisees putting him out and so on? This continues right on of where chapter 9 finished up, where, you know, he has this last thing there in verse 39 in chapter 9, for judgment I came to this world. So those that do not see may see, and those who see may become blind. And the Pharisees were there and heard all that. Who else? You're not going to be able to find it in the words of the text, but it's obvious if you think about what's going on here. The disciples were there. Those we know. And there's one more that we probably know for sure. Well, that's pretty good. There's probably some Jews around there that, you know, seem to hang around when these things are going on. And the one more that's probably there is that the man that was born blind is probably here to hear all of this. Okay? So Jesus is continuing right on, right out of the context of this conflict, talking to them. And starts with truly, truly. Some of your versions will say something else. What else does it say? Most assuredly. Rest assured. I tell you the truth. In the King James, what would it have been translated? Verily, verily. What does that mean when we see those? Those are code words. Remember? We've talked about it before a time or two. Pay attention. I'm telling you something you need to get right here. This is a high point of what I'm saying to you. Speakers do that often when they're giving a speech, when you hear it in preaching. If you don't get anything else, get this kind of a statement. So here he is. He says, truly, truly, I say to you, he who does not enter by the door and into the fold of the sheep, but climbs up some other way is a thief and a robber. We'll just kind of take these a statement at a time and see what Jesus is saying. So what's a sheepfold? There are some easy three-letter words that go along with this. Pens, where they put sheep. But in the period of time Jesus was there and all through there was a high plain, 35 miles running north, not too far. High plain out there, the mountain. Good for agriculture, and around there developed a sheep industry, so to speak, in the community. Dotted around there, have a community, and so they at night would bring their sheep to this community sheep pen and put the sheep in there, mixed all together, go to their place and sleep, and they would have a porter that would sit there and watch the sheep over the night. Would And so that's what's going on here. Is here's Jesus saying, a lot of people try to come to the sheep. The shepherd comes through the. He says other people try to get in some other way and steal a sheep or whatever. Only the shepherd's going to come in this way. So he's saying, this is the legitimate place of. Jesus saying if you come up another way, you're a thief and a robber. What's the difference between a thief and a robber? Well, it's unfortunate because English doesn't do well here. But one of those words really means to be a person who would steal a sheep to have it, put it in their own flock, part of their stock, whatever you want to say with it. The other word, the robber word that gets translated robber in most of them, means somebody that would go home and butcher it, or at least some way kill it for their own purposes. So one implies theft, but the other one actually implies destruction. And you know, you can imagine that we're hungry, we want something to eat. Well, I'll go steal a sheep, we'll butcher it, and comments. Start saying. Sheep. The doorkeeper calls his own sheep by name and leads them out. So if you want to keep going with the story, in the next day, you know, when morning comes, it's time to take the sheep back to the pasture, the shepherd shows up. And this was, when they'd show up, they would, and the sheep would respond to that. And because one in English lets it down a little bit, that phrase for leads them out has a little more behind it than just, okay, everybody line up here. You know, you've seen the kids in school. Okay, first graders line up here. You know, everybody gets behind somebody and they, you know, start off and they all follow real nice, sort of. And here, yeah, like, well, and in the same way, from what I read, often the sheep, you know, they would respond and they would, you know, segregate themselves or whatever, but they didn't necessarily willingly or joyously leave the sheepfold. Hey, you know, safe here, other sheep here, it's warm, comfortable, whatever. But the shepherd often would have to force take them out, and that's really a little force implied in the meaning there. So, but when he puts forth all his own, and that's maybe it's the puts forth is where I was really talking about in verse 4, he goes ahead of them and the sheep follow him because they know his voice. And so there's that recognition, and that's how they separate the sheep and so on. A stranger they simply will not follow, but will flee from him because they do not know the voice of the strangers. All of this a little bit. Figure of speech Jesus spoke to them, but they did not understand were which he had been saying to them. Figure of speech. What other translations do we have there?
Illustration.
Illustration? Anything else? Anybody have one that says parable? This parable? Because it's not a parable. The English translators are trying hard to be faithful. We don't have a good word for it. A parable is really an analogy or a metaphor, where you're talking about something very hypothetical and is intended that out of it, like Aesop's fables, you can draw a truth. That's what the parables were. It was a story to tell a truth. But in this case, and I didn't even write down the Greek word. I couldn't say it if I had. Some of these Greek words really defy me a bit on pronunciation. But this word really carries with it. This is a more of a simile or a truth, a true story that has more meaning in it. And so in the parables, often they were told in such a manner, or not in such a manner, but for such a purpose that with a part. And that truth is following through here as well, but this is a true story where there are truths that you expect people to get. I mean, when the Jews hear this, they're not amazed at this story. This they see every day. You're right, you know, a shepherd comes to the gate, and he brings his sheep there. Only the shepherds go to the gate. Other people aren't allowed there. They're inappropriate. Come that way. And yet, shepherd comes in the morning and takes and does his thing, and they're going, okay, yeah, I see, yeah, that's normal, see it all the time. And so in this case, you know, it is a true thing. They're going to accept that, they're going to get that truth, but they're probably not going to see. Well, the scriptures clearly tell us they did not understand what those things were which he had been saying to them, so they didn't get it. So if they had got it, which I'm depending on us to have gotten it, what is this? What is this story telling us? And I'm going to throw that out. Let's talk about it. We've got a lot of elements to this story. What's it talking about?
You recall he was talking about spiritual blindness just before this.
Yes.
It would seem to me like a spiritual truth to it.
Mm-hmm. Right.
Basically to eternity in heaven. That's basically what he's saying.
Okay. What else can we identify out of this? That's good. That's right. Right on target. What other truths are there? Ted said this too, and I didn't write it down.
Re-emphasizing the garden of torment. Because you say you see, you don't believe your sense they quit.
Yep.
Now,
it's interesting.
This is why.
uses two metaphors. He calls himself, first of all, the good shepherd.
Mm-hmm.
That goes through, and only those who go through that. But he also refers to himself, I think, as the gate himself.
Yep. And linguistically, in verse 7, when he said to them again, truly, truly, that is a separation, not in thought, not in time or anything else, but he's just saying, okay, here's another way of looking at me as well, and we'll spend some time on that also. We said he calls by name. Who's he calling? We can identify those folks in the example he's giving here. Who are they? The ones that call and follow. Okay. All right, we can continue to define that. That's true. They are the ones that respond to the truth.
Believers.
How else would you define those folks? Disciples? Good words. His own. What does that mean? They are the ones that God has given to Jesus. They're His. Remember, now I'm going to say the wrong chapter, 6, 7, in there when Jesus said, I come to my own, they're going to receive me, I'm not going to lose one of them that the Father's given to me. So, there's a defined group. If we were to go back to Ephesians, in him before the foundation of the world. This is a group of people that they are really his own people as given by God. And we should be honored if we can count ourselves among his own. I mean, are not we the ones that respond to his voice? Did we not get a very poignant example this week of responding to the voice of Christ? You know what I'm talking about? What was supposed to happen yesterday? How many of you really thought it was going to happen yesterday? If it had happened, would it have been because he had it figured out? You know, we had this guy, I forget his name. I don't try to remember his name. American Family Radio. Camping, yeah. He'd figured it out. The rapture was going to happen. Was it 6 o'clock yesterday? Oh, Eastern time. Oh, so that would have been 4 o'clock here. No, 5 o'clock here. It's the other way that goes 2 hours. Yeah, 5 o'clock here. Okay. So here I thought at 6 something exciting happened around here. Not something fortunate, but no, that was an hour later that the tornado struck. So anyway, he's got his own and they hear his voice. You know, alarm bells go off. Sometimes you hear somebody with a message and you just go, well, wait a minute, something's wrong here. I don't know what it is yet. I'm going to have to think about this, but this isn't right. Don't you know? Didn't we read here, it's the Holy Spirit that leads us into all truth? So ultimately that's where God's people go, is to the truth. And we've got those, we hear his voice. What do we do when we hear somebody else's voice according to this?
Get away from
them. His own run from the false shepherds. They know that's not the master's voice. Mm-hmm. Well, I was going to talk about this a little later, but let's just do it now. Do we have false shepherds today? Very many? They're everywhere, aren't they? And, we run from that. One of the things about this whole camping deal that just grated on me the most was the universal statements in the news media that I heard on occasion that said, believers everywhere are expecting the rapture. It's like, no believers were expecting the rapture. Okay? No true believers, nobody who was really his follower was expecting a rapture at 6 o'clock Eastern yesterday. Now, what was the big error in everything he was saying? What was the dead giveaway that if it had happened at 6 o'clock Eastern, it wasn't because of anything he knew? What's the giveaway? Testing your spiritual discernment here. What's that? Nobody knows. Even Jesus said, hey, that's not even mine to know. The Father alone knew at that point. I don't know now if that Jesus found out until after the event occurs, that if Jesus had any lead time or Father said, hey, you know, and comes in telling that kind of stuff, you can know. He's big on himself and a little low on the Lord. But are there other false shepherds out there? Yeah, there's a ton of them. How do we pick it up? What's the usual main things that let you know somebody's a false shepherd? And you can see it right here in this passage if you think about it just a second. It's how they handle the person of Jesus Christ. In particular, the thing that the whole book of John's about, often it's how they handle the idea, the concept of the reality of Jesus being deity. If you want to talk with any of the detractors, you can hear the truth by simply asking them about the deity of Christ. And if you start going down that path with most all of them, maybe all of them, I don't know the right answer to that because I haven't talked with everybody or heard about everybody's, but that's usually where the departure is, isn't it? And that's what this whole book. Other comments so far?
It also seems that most of what we would call preaching a false gospel, their favorite word. Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, very, very, yeah, very man-centered, very. You can be rich, you can be one of the 144,000, you can be, you can be, you can be, you can be. And it's not wrong to recognize that there is an element of salvation that is very beneficial to us. What's so beneficial to us? We stand guilty before Christ, before God in a huge way, in an immeasurable way. And the righteousness of Christ can be imputed to us so that we don't have to suffer for our own sins. That's a tremendous benefit, isn't it? And then we have the inheritance that Jesus talked about, co-inheritors with Christ. We're made sons and daughters of God through adoption, through the price that Jesus Christ paid for us. We move into slavery and into that. But we lose sight of it if we think that those benefits to us are the purpose of our salvation. The purpose of our salvation is the glorification of God, not so that we can have this benefit. Yes, it benefits us. He gives us this gift of salvation to take us into the truth, to lead us into saving faith, to enable us to believe. You know, that is certainly good for us, but it's not for our glory, it's for God's. You know, and that's been historically true for a long time. Who do the Pharisees in our story claim that they are ambassadors of? God, because they follow, remember last week? Moses. We're it. And out of that basis, for we are God's anointed ones, they didn't use those words, so it's not fair for me to put them on that, but that's what they imply. They've been placed by God to be His ambassadors, to bring to them the truth, to tell people what the Bible says, so that we can, and that they do it through laws, you behave these ways, then you're okay with God, when in reality, Jesus says your righteousness has to surpass that of the scribes and the Pharisees. They were very righteously appearing people. And you're right. You know, they did it, and it happens right up through today. Many people claim to have the mantle of God. Picking on one down in Oklahoma, I'm here in this prayer tower, unless you guys all do this certain thing, God's going to take my life. I wish nobody had done it. Let's see if it was really true or not. I'll bet God didn't take his life. I bet he'd have kept on breathing and had to live with the humiliation. But sometimes people follow those folks, and that's the path that is intended to take. Matter of fact, let's go ahead and take another look at that. Where is that? I'm skipping around in my notes now, so I'll probably get confused somewhere. It's kind of what I was going to wind up with, but we're there now. Go over to Matthew chapter 24. And let's look at verses 21 through 24. What did I do wrong? Nope, got it. Now I looked this up. Why does that not look right? Did I say 21? Okay, let me read my notes correctly now. Matthew 24, verses 21 through 24. Well, that what I said? Well, that's not what I turned to. Okay, Matthew 24. I mess it up all the time. Matthew 24, 21 through 24. Somebody read that for us.
Says to you, look, here is the Christ, or there he is, do not believe him. For false Christs and false prophets will arise and perform great signs and wonders, so as to lead astray, if possible, even the elect.
So, we ought not be surprised that we have these various false leaders out there, antichrists, if you will. You know, this is talking about antichrist with a big A, the time when the Antichrist and all of his henchmen will be working hard through signs and wonders to mislead everybody. And if possible, even the elect. What does that mean, and if possible, even the elect? That's right. Clear promises that that's not possible. No one can snatch them out of his hand. And so here we see, though, these false teachers are going to be doing that, and with a certain degree of success amongst the people who are not in the elect. They're going to have people following them think they're just doing the right religious thing every time they turn around. And you see that all over the world. We can talk about Antichrist, but we could also talk about Islam in the same breath. That's nothing more than a false religion that keeps people away from the truth of Christ. I say keeps people away. I mean, if they're the elect, they're going to respond. But you understand what I'm saying? It is the thing that they put in that is a false substitute for belief in the one true Christ. Comments? Okay, now I'll see if I can get myself unconfused and back where we were a little bit. All right, well, let's go on. I've got some things I want to bring out yet, but I think they'll fit well into this next passage. Going down now to verse 7, Jesus says to them again, truly, truly, I say to you, so he's changed ways he's talking about himself. In the previous verses, he was the good shepherd, and now he's saying, here's another example. Pay attention here. I'm the door of the sheep. And I say, and all who come before me are thieves and robbers. But the sheep did not hear him. I am the door. If anyone is saved, and will go in and out and find pasture. The thief comes only to steal and kill and destroy. I came that they may have life and may have it abundantly. So what's different in this passage? You know, earlier he was the shepherd, this time he's the door. What else is different? Yep.
Up his life.
And we'll spend some time with that next week. Yep.
So, and he's comparing himself to the Jewish leaders or the religious leaders who people have been listening to and responding to. Mm-hmm. He said, "No, I am the true shepherd, the one to listen to and respond to." And now he's saying, "Not only am I the one to listen to, but I am the one through which you will enter into eternity, basically, for salvation."
Yeah, and there have been others that have come before. And you're right on, Ted, as far as, you know, he's comparing himself to the scribes and Pharisees, but there were also others that had come before. In the various Jewish revolts and so on, they would go, "This is going to be our Messiah." Why? Because what were they looking for? They were looking to throw these Romans out in the sea or somewhere. They didn't want them in Israel anymore. And they certainly didn't want them to tell them how to run their country. So you have the people who had come previously that for a while people thought, maybe this is going to be the special one. And Jesus is saying to them, forget about all those folks that have come before. Forget about the kind of person you were looking for. That kind of person isn't it. I am the door of the shepherd. I'm the door of the sheepfold. And it's through me that you find salvation. So, thieves and robbers, back to those same terms. So if anyone enters through me, he will be saved. Go out and find pasture. We understand that language very clearly, don't we? You know, it is through Christ. This is a passage we turn to when Jesus said, "I'm the way, the truth, and the life," down in verse 10. Right? Nope, I'm in the wrong spot. That's life and have it abundantly. I'm in the wrong place, but yes. There were previous people that the folks had kind of placed some hope in because of their political rising up, that maybe they would be the ones out of political rebellion, military rebellion. That's where the zealots kind of come out of that group. You know, there were some zealots previously, others, but it also includes the scribes and the Pharisees, who came and were there and were leading people and claimed to be the religious leaders in the path to God. And so it's all a path other than the path he's bringing. Does that make sense? Good question. And so Jesus is saying, if you come up some other way, you're here to kill and destroy. That's pretty obvious. So it's probably worthwhile to take a few minutes now and talk a little bit more about the metaphor that's used here, because it's used in others as well with regard to a shepherd and the sheep. Matthew 18, 12 through 14. We'll do these pretty quickly. A couple of these, I'll just tell you what it says. This one's one that you're going to quickly remember when you read it. Matthew 18, 12 through 14.
"What do you think? If any man has 100 sheep and one of them has gone astray, does he not leave the 99 on the mountains to go search for one that is straying? And if it turns out that he finds it, truly I say to you, he rejoices over it more than the 99 which have not gone astray.
Yeah, I really wanted to use this because as the people are hearing about Jesus saying he's the good shepherd, it's worth getting a little bit of context. Because the situation, I told you about this high plain, but around the edges of this plain, it's pretty much filled with fairly steep ravines. And it was fairly normal to have a sheep wander off and fall down a ravine. It was kind of a dangerous place once they got off the edge of this. And so the shepherd, hard work. You're having to lead them around, get them to the water, get them to the grass. So you're constantly moving because the grass wasn't great. It was good enough, But it wasn't great, so, you know, constantly seeking out the next place, and also constantly having to deal with issues of the surrounding terrain. It was also a difficult life with regard to thieves and robbers, even on the plain. It wasn't unheard of for somebody to come out and try to steal a bunch of sheep right where the shepherd's there. Also, the wild animals. We know the stories of David, the various things he encountered as a shepherd, killed a lion, and dealt with other wild animals and problems as a shepherd. So it was a hard life. And so here we see Jesus saying, don't you know the one is important? Yep, they didn't go down and herd them out or lead them out. They carried them out. Yep. So, yep, often bearing the load of the sheep himself. Good point. Another one, if we went over to Matthew 9, we can just do that very quickly. We got just a few minutes yet. Matthew 9, 35 and 36. This shows Jesus' heart as he views the people and their need for leadership. Matthew 9, 35 and 36. Somebody read that for us.
And Jesus went throughout all the cities and villages, teaching in their synagogues and proclaiming the gospel of the kingdom and healing every disease and affliction. When he saw the crowds, he had compassion on them because they were harassed and helpless, like sheep without a shepherd.
You know, it's a metaphor that captures Jesus' heart as he's watching the people that he's ministering to and bringing his ministry to, his message to, even as he's dealing with their physical hurts and needs, a sheep without a shepherd. Comments, thoughts? This one I'm going to tell you about in Luke 12, 21 through 32, and I'm really talking about verse 32. Jesus is dealing with his disciples and the followers, and he basically calls them his little flock. So, you know, it's clear that throughout his ministry, this is a part of how he was looking at it. 14, when he's looking at his own arrest and what's going to happen, he looked around and had concern because he quoted the scripture. Let's go over to that one. Mark 14, verse 24. Shows the pivotal role of Jesus as the shepherd from his own understanding. Mark 14, 24. Whoa. I'm sorry, I can't read my own writing. Try 27. Skip on down to 27. This is a part of predicting Peter's denial. What does it say? And Jesus said to them, you will all fall away because it is written. This is prophecy. I will strike down the shepherd and the sheep will be scattered. So Jesus' role as shepherd becomes clear not only through Jesus' words here, but even through the effect for a period of time. And didn't they act like shepherd, sheep without a shepherd? I mean, they wandered around, they were there. When people brought Jesus has been resurrected and look, but they kind of all gathered their toys up and went back to fishing. Jesus had to come out to the water and say, hi guys, here I am. Got a little breakfast made for you. They weren't catching fish. He did a miracle first to show that to them. But he kind of had to pull them back together. Apart from the role of Christ, both before and after his resurrection, they were definitely like sheep without a shepherd, going their own way and being fully scattered. So here Jesus is using this analogy to show us his role here. It's not the first time it was used. I want to take you to one more place, and I think I can tie a thing in with this for you. Go over to Ezekiel chapter 20. Ezekiel It shows his here is that this isn't a new analogy. It was used through the prophet Ezekiel and other places in the Old Testament. In this particular case, verse 37 is the key verse that talks about it. And we can even expand on Jesus' role a little bit here. What's that got to do with a shepherd? What's that?
The shepherds did that.
Well, the shepherds did what?
They had this rod out, and the sheep passed over.
Very good. That's absolutely correct. Although,
I don't know why
there's more to it than that. And there was a particular time that they would do this. And that was when they're bringing the sheep into the fold. They would put their rod down. Let them pass through one at a time. And the sheep would come up and they would inspect the sheep. And they did this daily to look for injuries, something that need to starting, something they need to do to take care of their flock. And that's what they would do. And after after the sheep had been fully inspected, and if it needed some treatment or whatever, that might even be done as well, then they'd raise the rod, let that one go through, and then stop the next one. And that gave him a good head count. It did do that, but it was also their daily for each and every one of those sheep to know what was going on. And what God is saying here through Ezekiel with regard to Israel, there's a time coming when I'm going to pass you under the rod. And it's about judgment. But those that are, it's a little bit different situation what we're talking about over in John, but those that are that belong in the kingdom are going to pass under that rod and be a part of God's kingdom in the Old Testament. Well, we see the same thing happening here in the New Testament, taking care of his sheep. So I bring all that to you to just point out that when Jesus is talking about being a shepherd here, there's a lot to it that I even have met a real live shepherd once. He didn't have much English. It was out in the hills of Colorado. And he was from, I think he was from Greece, but I'm not sure. And he was out there being a shepherd for a U.S. sheep owner. And we happened to be out there camping in an open area that was, you could camp in it, you could graze in it, you know, it was just open to the public. And we got to meet him. And he didn't have much language. And what language he did had, after I figured out what words he was really repeatable, most of them. But nonetheless, he'd picked up some English vulgarities. And I guess he thought English, so he was kids and moms, and it took a long time to figure out, I don't know what that word is. But anyway, so I watched this shepherd, and I didn't understand at all what's going on here, how intense it really means. And I don't think I did a very good job for you this morning, but I'm trying to bring to you the intensity of what it meant. People that watched it as a part of their daily lives. And also, high level of security and oversight that went into guarding the door. And the discriminatory role of the door to keep out that which is false and that which is wrong and that which doesn't belong. Here we have to us Jesus saying to these people, I'm the good shepherd. I'm taking very specific care of you. Like a shepherd would that goes through the trouble of pulling sheep out of the ravine, that goes through the trouble of, as a shepherd would, caring for the sheep, looking them over. What problems? What kind of treatment do you need? Do you suppose that when a sheep had an injury, he was looking forward to the shepherd finding that injury? I don't know. That's hard to get in the mind of a sheep, isn't it? But you know, when you treat animals, I mean, you've taken an animal to the vet. You've been around a dog or a cat or a cow or whatever that needed some attention. They're often not real excited about you poking at their sore, are they? But yet, the shepherd does that to take care of that which is his own. And see, that's the thing is, you know, very important understanding this. We can step out of these two metaphors, and Jesus isn't a hired shepherd. busy. We have many we've already seen where Jesus is talking about these are his own. He works diligently, and as we're going to see later on, even to the point of laying down his life, to care for those sheep individually and to be the guardian, the door, and he is the only path then for salvation. Also, we go in and out and find pasture. And so it's not just about that day-by-day care, but he also takes care of us and feeds us and sees to what we need so that we can be spiritually healthy, spiritually thriving. What is it? What is our pasture? What does that mean? We go in and out and find pasture. What does that mean? What's that? Well, it's outside the sheepfold. Far, but what else? It's pasture. It's right here. Various ways he brings this to us as his pasture. It's his word. He brings it to us. He brings it to us as we hear from it from others, as we study it, as we what others have gone to the trouble of pulling out of it and making clear and truthful to us. In the middle of this pasture, sometimes we'll find in this pasture. But in the middle of people trying to bring us things that they'll claim as the Word of God, we do have those things that crop up where the good Lord says, wait a minute, that's not my voice. Don't go there. But that's part of this world, so it even protects us from the things that would cause us trouble. I'm not going to stretch the ravine, I'm not going to stretch this parable, I'm not going to take it to other places, but I'm going to make a statement. This isn't biblical. This is my analogy, and we also fall in ravines, don't we? And sometimes the shepherd has to go down, grab a hold of us, pick us up, and drag us out. And if you've been a Christian more than a week or two, you've probably experienced that several times. And that's just a part of life and being shepherded by this good shepherd. Absolutely. One part of what one commentator or anyway, talked about this second analogy. You know, did a pretty good job, I think, with the first one. But the second one, there's another place in the analogy that the shepherd is a door. And that is they had little sheep pens around that they often didn't bring them back into town. It was a real good picture of when the shepherd's the door, because he would take his sheep into a little pen that he knew was out somewhere where he could bed them down for the night when town was too far away. And then he would lay down in the door and wouldn't let anything in that shouldn't be in and would keep the sheep in where they were safe. And so that's another good part of it I didn't bring out earlier. Questions, comments? I was struck as I studied this by that intensity, and I don't think I've done it justice bringing it to you today, so I would encourage you to give that some thought and prayer on your own, just how intense it is. How is Jesus personally shepherding you? And I would encourage you to look beyond just the obvious things, because really, Jesus shepherds us in a lot of ways, in ways that seem obscure or different. It can come through suffering. It can come through illness. It can come through opportunities to be a minister. It can come from being ministered to. It can come through a confrontation. It can come through a moment when you realize you've acted like a fool. It can come through a moment where you've sinned and you have to confess that sin. It comes through all of those things. That's how Jesus shepherds us. And sometimes it hurts a little. But he takes good care of us. In the main, we go in and out and find pasture. Anybody else have any comments? Let's close with a word of prayer. Lord, you are gracious. You are more than gracious. You are very intentionally kind to us, even as you shepherd us, even as you deal with the problems and challenges that we have in life. Lord, as I sit here and think about what it had to mean to these people who were Jews that heard it. Lord, it's astounding how they could miss it. And yet they did, because